he looks smart, or the building looks smart, what are the key phrases or words that come to your mind? This is crowdsourcing of keywords. Let's start with Maritosh. Intelligent, okay? All smart people here, right? Yes. They're not here. Some more? Fun? Responsive, okay? See, almost everything good is when we show a smartphone as an example of smartness, what do we mean by that? Why is it smarter than the previous generation of phones? Latest, okay. So something that uses the latest of whatever. Okay? Yeah? Huh? Could you say? Okay, easy to access. And then, had one more phrase. Automation, okay. Automatically does many things. Often to your disadvantage in some sense.
Sometimes even getting trained.
Okay, okay. Okay, it's adaptive. Trains itself, right? Even when you don't want it to train itself. So, okay, any other?
Based on some operating system.
Smartphone. Okay. Based on some smart operating system? Okay. Let's say flexibility, flexible operating system. Or flexible program interface. Okay, we have quite a bit here. Now the question is, when we hear the word smart, many of these epithets will be associated with that thing. So we're going to talk about smart things. Now all of you have heard of IoTs, right? Internet of Things. So we're going to talk about smart things. Now here are some more key phrases. Clever. Nobody uses clever here. Bright, intelligent, able, analytical, shrewd, fast was here, energetic, sharp-witted, quick-witted, quick on the uptake. All of these are terms that we can think of if we spend a bit of time when we hear the word smart. Now, what's a smartphone? Where is that? What happened? Pictures. A bunch of pictures are not showing up. Okay, let's look at a smart door. This is not showing up properly. Let me see what's wrong. In the rendering of this, it's not happening properly. Can you? Okay, let me just check. No, this is actually. Oh, you know what happened? The other stick that we inserted corrupted the paper. So everything is gone.
Corruptible is also gone.
Pardon? Corruptible.
Oh, you have on the.
See, I don't think I have another version of this. So. What I can do? Give me a few minutes. There's something wrong with the file. So it's corrupted the whole file. Let me see if I have another version of it. Let me just work with this. It's not the same talk, but it's actually close enough. I can make the points along the way. No, this is, yeah. Let's see if this works better. But I full screen, no? Okay. This is not the same talk, but because that whole slide deck got corrupted, so we'll make do with this. But the same idea, but some of the nuances may be missing. We'll go through that. So smartphone is going to be having many of these properties. Smart door. Yeah.
It seems to be running fine on there. Can we copy onto desktop?
We can do that. We can do that. That'll be better. That'll be better. So, first question, why are people sitting in the back and not in the front? Any answers? Now, suppose this were a smart auditorium, what would it do? It will make you all come forward, right? But how does it do it? How would you plan this auditorium's behavior to make you all come forward? Pardon? Right, it will turn off all the lights in the back. Some of you may stay there because you can go to sleep in the process, but it will force you to come forward. How can we force somebody to have a certain behavior? What should I do? I can tell you that if you all came forward, we can turn off the lights in the back, turn off the air conditioning in the back, and thereby save energy, right? Right? That's one way to do it. But what do you need for that? You need to have the right inputs to manage that process. Correct? What are the inputs? What is the temperature inside? What is the temperature outside? How many people are here? How long will it take to cool the room to a certain level? What is the energy savings? What is the cost of energy per unit? All of that. That is where sensing comes in. Right? If you don't have the values for these various parameters, various inputs, you can't make the right conclusions, draw the right conclusions from the current conditions and tell people what the consumption is likely to be under these current conditions. So we have sensing to be done. You have to analyze the current situation in the context of what you sense, in the context of what the response should be, and give the response in a timely fashion. So all of those have to be happening in a way that will make you react to it. So now the question is, what should I tell you as a result of the analysis to make you come forward? That's the response I'm expecting, right? If you don't come forward, I can't turn off the air conditioning and the lights in the back. So what kind of responses are going to be meaningful? If I just tell you that we'll save 10 units of energy, will that help? How many of you will come forward? If I told you that we'll save 10 units of energy if you all came, occupied the front four rows of seats here, you will come forward. Anybody else? Two. Anybody else? I'm now doing an auction here. Okay, four, five, six, seven. Now, suppose I told you that it will save TAFR and hence the government of India 500 rupees. How many will come forward? Nobody. Because it doesn't, the money won't come to our pockets, correct? I'm going to give you more and more information. First information I gave you was 6 units of power. Second is, it will be translated somehow into some amount of money. Will you respond to that? That depends on how much the, how do I get the second number, the actual price? I need to know what the cost of energy is now. To do that, I have to sense the environment, which is the power company's databases, see how much they're going to charge me per unit. How many will move forward now? From 6 units to 500 rupees. Nobody cares, right? 500 rupees is one pizza in a decent place. So doesn't mean much for us, for most of us here. What if I told you that if you all came forward and closed the lamps, the lights and the ACs in the back, we'll save 2.5 trees. Because energy comes from natural resources. In this case, maybe the currently what is being used by the power company is wood for whatever reason, and that will be 2.5 trees equivalent of carbon emissions. Will you come forward? How many will come forward now on top of the people before? Okay, that number is high. Why is it? How come this third year and not the previous ones? Any thoughts? We all want to look good, right? To ourselves and to the people around us. So the point is simply this. What you have to sense to get the right response, in this case, reduction of power, reduced impact on the carbon footprint, all of that requires you to think about the current situation. Situational assessment has to be done. Analyze it, analyze the situation in the context of where you are, and then come to a decision and respond in a timely way. If I gave this question 1 hour later, nobody will be here. So I should know what questions to ask, how do you get the questions answered in the context of the current situation, what sensing to be done, what analysis to be done, and so forth. That's the whole point behind this exercise. And we'll do this sensing, analysis, and response all happening in a way that together they contribute to whatever we want to achieve. For example, here, reduction of energy consumption, reduction of the impact on the carbon footprint, and so forth. Okay, so smart door. Smartness here is going to be measured in terms of how much intervention, how much information somebody has to explicitly put in to let somebody in or out. So here, for example, if you put enough information into a smartphone and there's a detector on the at the door, it should read that, confirm that it's you, and you have the privilege to go in, it'll let you in. All of this is to make you do very little work. All you have to do is carry a phone. Now, can we do something better, where even that's not required, but some amount of pre-processing has been done on people who use this room, and this office or lab, whatever is on the other side of the door, so that when you walk in, it simply knows who you are. And for example, if you look at what the possible information that can be gathered as you walk through the door is, you can be weighed, and we can also measure your height. Is that good enough to identify somebody uniquely? We'll see. If I get this height and weight information together, maybe I can compare it against a database of people who are in that room, their height and weight, and then say this person is likely to be X, Y, or Z. So what we're going to do is to measure the height and weight, identify the user or users, and respond with the identity information of that person, store that information saying this person is going in, and then what we do, this is where smartness and the response comes in. We're going to turn on the fans, lights, laptop, whatever this person is going to use inside the room. So when he or she goes from the time that the person takes to go from the door to the seat, everything is on ready for them to start operation right away. The key question is, can we identify that particular user? Now, if you have a small population of users, let's say 20 to 30 people like in a lab, this is our situation in my lab. If you look at height and weight combination, quite often using SVM or random forest classifier, we can get a fairly large percentage of identified people fairly accurately. Now, if you do one more thing with shoulder width as one more input that you get from a connect and attached to the paraphernalia, actually the thing comes down, accuracy comes down. If you add one more torso length, it comes down even further. So the point is, more information does not mean more accuracy. It actually adds to the confusion. So now, bottom line is, if you just take weight versus height and weight, we can go from about 66, 70 to close to 90%. Okay, so now the question is, how do you bridge the gap? Understand where we are now. We let somebody go in, we measure the height and weight, we have a database of heights and weights, we know who the possible candidates are for the question, to answer the question, who is going in. Now, we have to bridge the gap. How do you bridge the gap? By the way, this cost is, for a smart door like we have, it's about $100 versus $1,500 for an RFID system. We do the conversion. Now, how do you identify somebody uniquely? What we do is to use common sense. Common sense says that from the sensor information that you get, if you identify possible occupants, you use other information available to you, like, for example, suppose you come up with ABC as the possibilities. If you prune the set using people's schedules, people's behavior in terms of, in the sense of usually somebody comes only after lunch, having had a long night, and so forth, then you can prune the set appropriately to get a single answer to that question of who is entering the room. Now, this may not always be possible, but in a small class, lab-like environment, 30, 40 people, it's almost always feasible to come up with a single person as the final identified entry, who is entering or leaving the room. Now, this is a sense of fusion for you beyond what you normally do. Normally, you fuse what is available right there. Here, we're going beyond that, saying there's a lot more information available to you. We can use that to uniquely identify the person. This is smartness. Smartness does not mean I have everything around me given to me in a platter. It's saying I should look for more information available and exploit that to the extent possible to answer my query. Okay? So now we want to go from a lab environment to a classroom. The mantra here is, in the context of energy, you want to consume energy only when it's occupied, and vice versa, actually. So that is a, if there's energy being consumed, somebody is there. If somebody is there, they'll consume energy. So what we do is to first start with an empty classroom. And if a human is detected, and we'll see how that is done, we'll turn on the lights, this L here. And if it's stuffy, we'll turn on the fan. And if it's hot, they'll turn on the AC. So all of this happens automatically by sensing where we are and through sensors, turning on the actuating those devices which are required to make the place comfortable. So this is there is an empty, dark classroom. Then we have, let's go through this. We go from there to this when this current walks in, lights are turned on, and then the fan starts working, AC starts working, and we go and remain in this state as long as somebody is in the classroom. And finally, when the guy leaves, zero occupancy implies zero consumption. I'll show you a picture, a movie in a little bit. But first thing is to realize that to get all of these sense values, if somebody is coming in, the place is hot, cold, whatever, you need to have sensors. And anything can be sensed in multiple ways. For example, here we have proximity sensors, arrays of sensors, proximity sensors, camera, combination of all of those. And these are the various parameters which can be used to see how good the sensors chosen are. For example, is it correct always? Is it going to be giving wrong answers? Is it prompt? What's the data information, data packet size like? What is the resiliency? What is cost efficiency, and so forth? None of these are ranked here, 1 to 5. Nobody wins all the time across all parameters. Similarly, in terms of the correctness, is it false positive? Are they higher, lower? What is the network usage, so forth? So depending on whatever parameters you are, nothing wins all the time. That's the important lesson from this. So we have to understand where we want to be, how much price we want to pay, and choose the appropriate combination of sensors. Now, in terms of energy savings, This is what we have. This is the cost of energy for air conditioning. And this is, these are different slots, 8:30 to 9:30 all the way to afternoon slot. This is the cost of energy for fans and lights. So you can see that depending on the time of day, because you're starting at the beginning of the day, this is high. After that, it's lower. Then again, it gets hotter during the noontime, so forth. Now, if you use a smart classroom approach, that like we just saw, the finite state diagram being the way in which the control happens, you can see that the whole energy consumption throughout the day in various slots comes down quite a bit. Now, we can save about 40%, up to 40%, and the payback period is about a year, 12 to 18 months of academic on the academic calendar. This is quite good, right? So we have done this without any major sensing, major cost towards sensing, by using very simple sensors, like simple cameras, simple PIR sensors, and so forth. Now, we can do even more. This is where some extra cleverness comes in. If you look at this classroom schedule, there are two classrooms here which are small. This is 205, 305. This is the real classrooms. And as he was saying before, these are all currently fully instrumented so that we can get data from them and also see how our algorithms can be put into place and see the effect of them in the real world. So now, if you look at this, there are a lot of gaps. A gap means that during the gap, suppose you have a gap after a room has been cooled, the room is going to warm up, because during the gap, you normally turn off the air conditioning. If after the gap, the class meets again there, you have to cool the room again down. So here, for example, during this gap, nothing happens. So usually, after you finish these three classes, you turn off the air conditioning, only to turn it on again. Now, if you were to look at this and say, are there ways by which we can reduce the energy consumption? What we do is to move things from a larger classroom to a smaller classroom so that the amount of energy required to cool the room becomes smaller. That's number one. Number two, we adjust the gaps in such a way that rather than closing down the air conditioning of the room, you keep it at a slightly higher temperature than what you normally have, and then come back from that higher temperature to the temperature that you would desire, so that during the gap period, you spend some energy on cooling the room, but when the room starts again to be used, it is not as hot as it would be without the air conditioning. Get the point? So with that in hand, you spend some energy to keep a room which is not being used, but later that helps you because you don't have to cool the room down from an outside temperature to the required temperature. All this put together gives you one more level of cleverness, if you will. And if you put all this together, we get pre-cooling, is what's happening here, and scheduling based on room size. And if you put everything together, you get this different way of looking at the savings. You have baseline as this. This is the lights and fans, this is HVAC. Better baseline is when we turn off the energy consumption possibilities like ACs during the lunchtime. That is this. So if you have 9 slots there, this is 7 slots. You save about 20% right there. Then if you base it on occupancy, like using those the finite state diagram-based transitions, you get save another 10%. And then if you use a schedule-based approach, you get another 10%. So finally, the overall savings is about 40-50%, which is very large compared to what you normally would think of as being a good payoff. And this has a better payoff than even 12 months. We can get the savings in about 9 months in terms of the cost of the sensors and the actuators. So what we have totally is this. We have a smart lab, a smart classroom, smart scheduling approach, and put together we get a smart academic environment where we are sensing meaningfully. By the way, this is S for sense, A for analyze, R for response. And it also does one more thing. It remembers what it did the last time it came across the situation. Why? Because a smart person doesn't have to be told again and again what to do. If he encounters a situation again, he or she remembers what he or she did the last time they came across that situation, and repeat what they did then. Right? That is the remembering part. So what we have is sensing meaningfully. Meaningfully means what? Depending on the parameters that I showed you before, different types of false positives, negatives, cost, accuracy and so forth, you decide what should be sensed. Analyze it, like we saw before. What is the required response to that sensed information, sensed values from the sensors, and how do you respond in a meaningful way and as in a timely way, right? So remember, all of this has to be done in a real-time manner, as they call it normally, because if you respond 5 minutes later, the place might have, the corner where it was supposed to be cooled might already have cooled down by the circulation that's happening naturally. So 5 minutes of downtime in terms of the quality of service that the person has experienced. So all this means that we have to be smart by using these three interventions: sensing meaningfully, analyzing, respond, and remember timely way. This is the basic slide which I want to show you now. The demo. Let's see. Where's the?
Welcome to the Smart Energy Informatics Lab. Sound. Where we manage energy computationally.
Oh.
Here we have the setup of the smart door system.
Sorry.
It consists of two laser phototransistor pairs installed to detect entry or exit. An ultrasonic sensor above and a weight mark below measures the height.
Okay, now. Okay, this is the way we start. Let's start. Can you increase the volume?
Welcome to the Smart Energy Informatics Lab, where we manage energy computationally. Here we have the setup of the smart door system. It consists of two laser phototransistor pairs installed to detect entry or exit. An ultrasonic sensor above and a weight mark below measures the height and weight of the subject. The data gathered from height and weight sensors is fed to an AI classification algorithm for learning and predicting user identity. Soft information like users' schedules and current occupants in the room is used to disambiguate between people having similar height and weight. Each occupant has his own set of preferred appliances which are switched on when he is in the room and turned off when he leaves the room. This helps conserve enormous amounts of energy while giving the occupants a personalized experience. Smart classroom complex consists of four classrooms where consumption occurs if and only if there is occupancy. Let's take a look at one of these classrooms now. The moment a person enters the classroom, a PIR sensor near the door is triggered and the lights turn on. Hereafter, image processing techniques like motion and skin detection are used to discern any change in the occupancy's. A few seconds later, fans and air conditioners turn on based on occupancy, humidity and temperature. The appliances in this zone are turned off since the zone was previously unoccupied. We turn off appliances in unoccupied zones, thereby reducing power consumption per room. If occupancy continues to be detected for a certain period of time, appliances turn on. We have calculated the energy savings of the smart classroom complex to be 48% with a payback period of 6 months, which is very attractive. When the system fails to detect human presence for 30 seconds, it infers a state of zero occupancy and turns off all appliances. Thank you for watching.
Okay, so that's a very quick a picturization of the two areas we have covered in terms of smartness, which is the smart laboratory and the smart classroom. And this is being extended to other places in the campus now. So hopefully we'll see more energy savings as time goes by. So what we have done is two things. We have done, in this case, reduction of the unnecessary consumption. We're not throwing away anything that you would need for having a quality of comfort which you're used to, right? Temperature-wise, we are maintaining the temperature as you would desire. And in terms of lights, we keep the lights and fans and other things on as you'd need. Only thing is when it's not required, normally things are on, we will turn off the appliances as and when the situation arises. Now, there is another insidious effort, insidious property called the peaking of the consumption. Now, what do you think is a normal behavior of consumption versus time? No, I'll use this. No problem. So, suppose I ask you to tell me the time versus consumption of the energy. What will this, and we start at, let's say, midnight, 12 a.m., 12 p.m., 12 a.m. What will be the profile of this consumption in a place like the campus here? It will be quite low here, right? Hopefully, the machines which are working are not human machines, but servers and things like that. And then what happens? Sometimes it might come down, because towards 4 o'clock is the lowest time. And then it goes up slowly here. And then it might start to peak to go up, right? And then what happens is it comes down when people go to lunch, and peak once again. I'm not drawing the scale, but you'll see two peaks usually, like that. Now, this the area under this curve is the total consumption for the day, right? Now, we want to keep it as small as possible, which is what we did in the first bullet, reduce unnecessary consumption, thereby keeping this low, keeping the total area under the curve as small as possible. Now, this peak here has a part to play in the total cost of the energy, because not every unit in this consumption is going to cost the same. Why? Because, so for example, if this is a time when everybody turns on the AC, we may not have enough power being generated during the time to satisfy all the AC requirements. So either you have to have a low voltage profile, meaning that the devices may be suffering from low quality energy, or you'll have to set a warning to people saying, don't turn on your ACs anymore, because the power consumption has reached this peak. So you want to keep this peak as low as possible. I mean, reduce it, bring it down. This is a very important aspect, because typically, however, when we turn on the AC, we want the AC to start cooling the space, right? So how does it happen? What happens is, normally you cater to this level of consumption. The peak takes you beyond that. It has to kick in some very fast-moving energy sources. Like, for example, diesel generators may be brought into the picture for a campus like this, where they are waiting to be brought into the grid, into the circuit, so that any new requirements that come in beyond this level can be satisfied. These are usually polluting sources of energy. So we want to reduce the peak. How we do that? We have to go back to the drawing board, look at the physics of how cooling happens. This is how cooling happens. When you have a set temperature of 24, which is what you want to maintain this room in, room at, and you're outside somewhere here at 32, what happens is the temperature is brought down by the air conditioning. It comes here at the other end of the bottom end of the band you want to maintain. When you reach here, it starts to warm up because the AC is turned off. The power to the air conditioner is turned off. It warms up again, the space. And when it reaches the top of that band, it repeats itself. Now, the point is, this is not a linear curve. Okay, that's number one to remember. Second is, when you set it at 24, it doesn't mean it's going to remain at 24. It's allowed to come down by delta, go up by delta from the set temperature. So you have the band to work in. How can we exploit this behavior and make the peaks disappear? Now, what happens in the morning when you come in? We turn on all the air conditioners, right? We turn on everything that we can control, we turn them on. What happens then? Everybody turns on at 9 o'clock. All the power hungry air conditioners start working. Power starts to build up. Energy consumption increases by a large amount when everybody comes in the morning. Rather than this, suppose we flatten this profile of consumption to this. Okay, then what happens is everybody gets to start, not when they want to, but slightly delayed. AC1 will start at the right time, AC2 will be delayed by a little bit. What you've done is to do scheduling of these appliance starts, so that afterwards, after the first delay, everybody schedules at a certain period. You can see the connection between this and real-time scheduling. This is periodic, it's also periodic, but for the delay. So what we have done is to map the problem of scheduling air conditioners to the problem of to use the scheduling literature at our disposal so that we can give the same quality of conditioning with a flattened profile. So now this problem is solved. Essentially what I have done is, what would have happened here is a large peak occurs here. Instead I have a flattened portfolio to deal with, making the peak disappear so that I don't have to kick in with the other generators that normally happens. So this is peak demand reduction. What I have to make sure is that this behavior doesn't reduce the quality of the environment that we are working with. For example, here, suppose there are three air conditioners or three cooling towers, whatever, and only two of them can be run because that's where the peak is given to us. Okay, so in this example, we have M is 2. We can have up to 2 which are turned on, but we want to keep the only one running all the time. Okay? Now, if you take this, there are three air conditioners to be used for the cooling of a room, but only two are allowed to be run, any two. Can we manage to keep the temperature within the band? That's the question you're asking here. We can convert this into this pictorial rendering of this thing, where we come down on one AC, and it reaches the bottom end, it's turned off, it starts warming up, so forth. Okay, are you with me? The picture is clear? So now, the question is this enough? We've shown pictorially, yes, but is it possible that it may not be cooling the room to the level that we want? And this is exactly what schedulability is all about in the real-time literature. And so what we're doing here is to sense the ambient temperature and the available peak power. And peak power is telling us that we can't turn on more than two air conditioners. And we have to respond with this M and a temperature band. Okay? So this is feasibility checking. So we can do that by converting that requirement into an inequality. If we're satisfied, then we know that the aggregate cooling is larger than the aggregate warming, and that's where it works. So when I was introduced, you probably saw that I'm going to use all the tricks in our trade, from sensor networks to operating systems to caching in operating systems to distributed computing, everything that we all take for granted in pockets. I'm bringing all of them together to solve the problem of energy management, which is to me very exciting because the boundaries that we have between these areas disappears, and to see that unless you bring them together in a not simply multidisciplinary way, but in a seamless way, we cannot solve the problem of energy management. Anything that you have to develop in a smart way has to do that. So only the domains will be different in different places, but we have to be wearing multiple hats at different times. So now, the question is, suppose we have, this is a comfort band, right? This says the temperature of the room should be maintained between 23 and 25. Now, M is 3, which says that I'm going to keep 3 of the 5 ACs. This situation is there are 5 ACs. What is the maximum number I can turn on and maintain this temperature? Is it possible? Now, we know the cooling rate and the warming rate. We take all of that into account and say, apply that formula that I showed you here, and then say, yes, it's feasible. So this says that if you have only 3 running at any point in time, any 3 of the 5, I can maintain this comfort band comfortably. What about 2? Suppose the peak consumption allowed is only going to let me have 2 ACs on at any point in time, 2 cooling towers to be on. All of these are equivalent. Then the answer is no, you can't. Because these 2 running by themselves, out of the 5, will not have enough cooling power totally to satisfy that feasibility condition, so much so that this temperature band cannot be satisfied. Whereas if you increase the temperature band by 1 degree on both sides, we have, for this band, which is warmer than this, 2 ACs are enough. Okay, so what we have done is to have a very systematic approach to dealing with the problem of energy availability. So if we say that this is, for simplicity, 2 ACs worth, this is 1 more AC worth, we're saying that for a slightly higher temperature, 2 ACs are enough. That bound that you have on maximum energy consumption, we can still live with that. Are you with me? So this is basically what we have. We have we are sensing the environment inside and outside, analyzing it. This is a feasibility check. Response is yes or no. And during the runtime, we make sure that the band is satisfied. Because when it comes to the bottom end of the band, we turn off the AC, power to the AC, and when it goes to the top, we turn on the AC. Okay? So now we have the whole story, sensing, analyzing, and responding. Meaningfully is very important. Normally, when you talk to people who work on this in the area of IoTs, they say, throw as many sensors as you want. They'll all give you data. You take the data you want, use it for your decision making. This is like saying, I'm going to mix all the junk in the world, take it to my office, and then start sorting out and see which one I need. Rather than saying, or take for example, garbage collection. Suppose you put all the garbage into one single bin, and somebody in a dump yard will have to sort them out and say, this is plastic, this is tin, this is that, and then sorting happens there. If you start sorting at home, the problem becomes much simpler, right? So same thing here, if you sense meaningfully to start with, I don't have to deal with a lot of data. So the big data problem essentially becomes feasible to tackle if you sense meaningfully. Analysis, you have to analyze what you have to do and make sure that the result of that is going to be able to satisfy the needs of the application that you have. This is what I mentioned before. You also want to remember what you did in the current situation. So should the same situation arise later, you don't have to do all of this again. If you send the same values again, and the circumstances are otherwise the same, you remember the old value, use that now. This is what a smart person does. Okay, so now we have the operational meaning of smartness, S-M-A-R-T, which says, know what you have to sense, sense only that. Not only that, provide for sensing only for that. Don't provide all the sensors required. Know what you have to sense in a certain situation, put the sensors for it, analyze them the way you have to produce a response which is timely and appropriate. Okay? So now the whole story becomes this. This loop continues. So a smart person essentially does these three things continuously. He's always sensing around himself, saying, what should I be doing next? And then the question is, when should I be doing this? Where, when, what? These questions themselves are going to be answered by repeating this loop again. Right? So what did we sense initially for? To decide how much energy to be used for this room. That led us to a certain requirement of sensing meaningfully. That itself calls these questions to be answered. Each of these requires the same sequence of steps to be taken. Are you with me? So this is a recursive process. Same thing for analysis. For analysis, do we use archival data, real-time data, disaggregated data, aggregated data, what combinations, so forth, what period? Again, you have to apply the same rule. You sense what you need, analyze it, and then decide that I need archival data, nothing more. So this becomes a forest of decisions to be made, the leaf node of which is a specific type of intervention, saying intervene with a temperature sensor. Analyze with a random forest technique, or respond with a signal to this particular location. Okay, so this to me is a very interesting way of looking at it, because it tells you how to grow the forest and then collapse it based on what you are given in terms of sensory processing capabilities, analysis capabilities, and response capabilities. I don't have too much time to go into this, but this is something that is underlying the technique, the theory that I mentioned before in the abstract that was earlier talked about. So now, what are the kinds of analysis? You can do model-based reasoning, exploit correlated phenomena, regression, all the usual techniques for analytics can be brought in. So now that gives you two techniques to reduce the need for unsustainable energy sources. Okay, any questions so far? I've been talking without a break there. Anybody?
The problem is that this is smart. So if I try to, whatever you have done here, to take the camera to another house, where there is greatness of the
system,
etc. Then you have to ask more questions to modify it.
Correct.
So in a sense, it is smart and so it can also come to the
what was the last sentence?
That is, suppose in Mumbai, where I can take it for our
Right.
So I can run any object.
Mm.
Now that thing is, I go to some other file. I forget the day in the classroom more elaborate. I want to use my same thing.
We can do same thing.
Yes, but then the problem there is that I may have to take any similar input.
Yeah, yeah. What happens there? I'll give you the answer. In fact, here, what you're going to do here is to use other energy sources. Bring them, for example, if you have a school which has got intermittent power only, and hopefully they have other sources to make up for that. For example, solar panels could be in the roof. They could have, for my parents have two battery packs to survive blackout in Chennai. So they can be brought into the picture. The question is, how best do you use it? For example, if there is grid power available, I don't want to use my battery. Similarly, if the sun is shining, I want to charge the battery. If the battery is going to be at a low end of the band, I don't want to use the battery. So those are decisions to be made in a smart way. To do that, we have the algorithms. Okay, so there's nothing here which assumes that a certain condition is going to prevail wherever you apply this. What it will do is to take a situational awareness approach to things, takes stock of the situation, and given what your ultimate goal is to run the minimum amount of energy required devices so that you can get over the blackout period, it will do all that. Okay. So, for example, in the context of availability of renewable resources, you want to exploit them whenever possible. Right? There's more energy available from the renewables than you need for the current usage, you want to store them. But you want to make this very carefully, these decisions, because whenever you use some energy from the battery, you may be running into a situation where when you absolutely need it, it may not be available. For example, this time of day pricing is coming up now, where depending on the time of the day, the cost per unit will change. So suppose the cost per unit is now quite high from the grid, you may decide to take it from the battery, right? If solar is not available because it's the night time. Now, if you take it from the battery because it's cheaper to take from the battery, because you put in the battery from the sun, it's zero cost at the time, then when you have a blackout, you won't have energy in the battery. Now, what is one way to solve the problem? To predict when the next blackout is likely to happen. You can do that by using analytics. Right? Frequency with which blackouts happen, what is the probability of an unannounced blackout, and all of that. Take the probability into account and then decide whether to use the battery for the current purpose or something else. So this is all required kind of analytics that you build into the analysis phase of what we talked about. Okay? So now this is what the graph I showed you before. We want to use smart approaches, as I said. And now there's one question that people ask me all the time. Why don't we let people make the decisions? Okay, what the question then turns into the sub-questions, which are, what do people know about their own consumption? Do you know this profile before? How many of you know your household energy consumption profile? Not very many. I'll give you the survey that we did, the result of that. What is the potential for renewable energy to be used in your own, and how can you optimally use energy? We did this survey in our campus, to know what consumers understand about their consumption. Okay, how many of you know your monthly bill for energy, approximately? Oh, wow, this is a very informed audience. Do you know, I'm going to ask this question. It's supposed to be a surprise quiz. How many of you said? Half the people, is it? Oh, wow, this is much more than an IIT, so it's a more smarter audience. So you can be proud of that.
So is it free?
It's not free.
Students, so they don't know.
No. Who?
Students.
No, this is all from campus sites. I'm going to show you the graph. This is the Aravalli building. This is the northern end of the campus. Yeah, that's one of them. But the other reasons for that. So if you look at this, family size is 1 to 6. These are the apartments where the numbers of members of the family is there. 13 floor building. Each apartment has a smart meter and a distribution of consumers is like this. Now if you look at the profile, 21 profiles look like this. This picture here. 13 like this, 6 like that. Okay? Now they're all different. However, when we ask people what their profile was, we got these responses. Number of correct responses for the bill awareness, not the profile, this is the cost of the bill per month, was 16 out of some 54, I think, total. And when we asked when the peak occurs, from their point of view, only 9 of them got it right, 1/4 of them. And we asked for when is the, what's the shape of your profile, even less people got it right. Now, this is the reason why I'm saying, if you depend on the consumers to tell you how to use the power better, or in a more, informed way, they won't participate in it because they don't care. If they care, then these numbers will be much higher. So now the question, how do you make still energy to go farther than it does now? Meaning that you can cater to the needs of more houses, more apartments, more buildings than we are able to by properly distributing the power among the client population, customer population. Reason for a low awareness, we have smart meters, but they're supposed to do all the work, but they don't. But consumers don't have an interface to visualize the data. It's like having a meter somewhere, it sends information somewhere else, and you have no way to know what the meter is telling you now. Second is we get the salary deduction, so we don't feel that number. And we don't even feel a pinch for it. How much is the average consumption, you think? 1,500 rupees. Two pizzas, right? In a decent pizza place, you don't care. Electricity bills form, therefore, a small percentage of our income. So all of these lead to each individual not caring for their consumption, which means that when you ask them to intervene to reduce the consumption so that we can avoid the peak, they won't do it. This is clear. However, the multiplication factor is the millions, hundreds of millions, right? That many households are going to be, if they reduce by 5%, overall consumption reduced by 5% and more. So the question, how do you make that happen? Make it happen by automation. Automation is what I've been talking about, using smart techniques for coaxing people to come forward. This is an experiment that's going to run with you. Let's see how many people move. If you, people in the back move forward during this 1 hour talk, we will have saved 30% energy, 600 rupees, or 2.5 trees. Now, all of this requires input. This I pulled out of the hat. I can't do that in real time, in the real world, right? You won't take it seriously. What do I have to do to get these numbers? I have to get all of these values gotten from a set of sensors, which will tell how many people are there, where are they seated, what is the temperature variation, what is the outside temperature, what is the power consumption profile, what is the energy consumed for different configurations, what is the limit of the maximum power, is there one, and what is the power price structure. Only if I have answers to these questions, I can put those numbers up. Right? So how do I get these facts, these values together? Just like a JE, what should I say, first ranker doesn't become first ranker overnight. He has to gather all the data, all the smartness by working hard. These sensors have to work hard to provide the smartness that it finally boils down to these questions, these numbers, right? But as just like a JE student does by solving the same problem 100 times, you remember what your previous answer was and apply that here. Again, same idea. You remember what your prior decisions were, and that helps you making these numbers come out in a faster way than if you start from scratch. So anyway, so the point is you have to sense the facets that you want to observe very quickly. What time is it? Five minutes, okay, I'll complete. This is what Anshul is working on. You want to sense the facets. Facet means some behavior that you want to observe. Could be power consumption, occupancy, air quality, number of on appliances. And you want to observe them with as few sensors as possible. Our mantra is not to throw money at the problem, because that will defeat the whole purpose of the exercise, or of the whole project, or even our deployment will be at a loss if you were to do this without thinking about where to put the sensors, what sensors to put in. So here is a very interesting possibility. Use soft sensing to observe the facets that we want to see. For example, here, we are comparing two different approaches. One is the actual power values, which is the red, and the blue is the predicted power values from some learning algorithm. This is a good fit. Similarly, here we are looking at the number of on appliances, in this case laptops and PCs, and their power, their number correlates very well with the power consumption of the whole building. Number of laptops or PCs which are running now, which are on, is a good proxy for the actual power consumption. Normal power consumption would be sensed using smart meters. Here we are counting the number of machines. Very easy to do. So now each of these can be converted into a soft sensor, which replaces the hard sensor. So you have physical sensors disappearing from our consideration because they're being replaced by soft sensors. So we can take the classroom complex that I showed you before, and we have these four classes, and then the ODU stands for outdoor unit for air conditioner, and the large classrooms are divided into two zones, that's where you see these other leaves. Now the value that you compute for this whole classroom complex is made up of the values of those for these four leaves, and then the ODU. For example, suppose I ask you for the power consumption of the whole complex. It will be the sum of all the leaves, right? Each of the rooms will contribute its part, you sum them. Occupancy status, any room is occupied. If room 1 is occupied, or 2 is occupied, 3 is occupied, so on, we get the power the occupancy status for the whole area. Similarly, vacancy status is AND. If all are vacant, then the whole complex is vacant. Temperature, something like weighted average. So now the function that you want to compute here depends on what element or what facet you want to observe. And so now you use a building structure to sense a particular facet. That again reduces the number of sensors that you need. So another possibility is to use the inference engine that you can build. For example, looking at the camera input and the PAR sensor, you can sense the occupancy. And now if you do an inference engine here, with temperature and occupancy, that will give you the number of appliances which are on. Similarly, if you use a smart meter and the switch status, putting them together along with the number of appliances, then you can get the power consumption. This particular picture shows you how you construct the soft sensors. These are the hard sensors, these ovals. Everything else is softly computed with an inference engine or a simple computation engine, or the structure of the space, right? So with this in hand, with all of these good techniques in hand, we can now construct a solution where you're looking for the facet, either a hard sensor or a soft sensor is possible. Now, you use the one that you want. Why? Because soft sensors have some inaccuracy attached to them. Inference engine will have some inaccuracy. So now we want to see the inaccuracy is less than what you what is desired, what is the maximum that is allowed, or if it's very high, you replace that with a hard sensor. With this in hand, we can now replace 10 smart meters with one. Okay, so now with that, we have a large reduction in the number of sensors required. Cost comes down, payback period increases. This is what we did for the four classroom complex. So now. With that, we have a notion called observability. What we're saying is, you have a set of facets to be observed. We can put smart sensors, soft sensors, or hard sensors, and you want to make the whole space observable depending on the purpose of that sensor to start with. If the observability is satisfied by soft sensors, we should do that because that reduces the cost. Okay, now all of this requires big data. Inference engines have analytics underneath them. So we have to get a lot of data under our control so that we can use them for building this inference engine. So now this is the last point. I mentioned to you earlier that we can store the excess energy beyond what we need into a storage device like a battery and use them during blackouts or even for reducing the total cost because the time of day costing can increase our bill, which you can avoid by using the battery charge to our advantage. So renewable energy and batteries come together very nicely. So now the last bit, we did a survey of the potential for renewable energy in Mumbai, and very interestingly, the rooftop potential is about one half of the actual consumption. very large policies to harness it. For example, in Mumbai, when you have a tall building, what happens is the rooftop is given in for parties, right? Now, that amount, the income that the house owner or the apartment owner gets from the parties is much larger than what he'll get from solar energy. So he doesn't give the space for putting panels, solar panels. How do we avoid that? How do we make this disappear so we can use it for better purposes like energy creation, generation? Unfortunately, solar energy produces some heat. It takes away the space. So we have to design new panel structures for that. So good, startup idea that might be worth looking at. So I want to put the pieces together. You have sensing and responding normally. Now you want to respond timely for anything to be useful. What adding in the middle is analysis. And then we have meaningfully sensing. Remembering is added to that to make a smart system happen. And so all of this has to be done with this thing to remember that these three things are done whenever we ask these questions. Whenever somebody asks us a question, we are going to be smart. We have to say, what should I be sensing? What does he or she want? Analyze it, respond in a way that makes meaningful and timely sense to the person asking the question. Now, this can be applied all these four times. Design time, deployment time, initialization time, run time. What I mean by that is when this building was built, these questions were asked. What is the building for? What is the room for? And then at runtime, when it came, I should have asked you to answer the question. Do you want to be in the front or the back? You want to be in the back? We won't bother you. You won't have any lights. You won't have any cooling. If you're happy with that, you can stay there, otherwise you have to come to the front. If I'd done all that, then I saved energy by now, 500 rupees, and the whoever manages the money will be happier by the money. So they all work together, design time, deployment time, installation time. We have talked about multiple things. We also have a smart share that we design. Smart buildings, smart campuses, smart cities come out of it. So this is the bottom line. Save energy by using energy efficient appliances. Turn off devices when you don't need them. Comfort levels, set them smartly, don't set them to be very low. If you don't want to have the AC on, better, because fans are much more energy efficient than ACs. Exploit elasticity. Elasticity is this idea that you don't have to run something at the given time or for the given amount of time. For example, suppose you want to cool a room, I can pump a lot of air quickly, cold air quickly, or I can send cold air in bits. It will take a little longer to cool the space, but that will also reduce the amount of energy that we use, store excess energy. So all of these five interventions are possible automatically. So towards sustainability, reduce consumption peaks and reliance on unsustainable energy sources, reuse, recycle resources with 3 R's. Okay, reuse, recycle, and reduce. If you want to take away any one message, this is it. And this is the whole thing that we do. We look at multiple smart things, how to be smart, smart principles. Computational thinking, I forgot to mention this, very important. What do I mean by that? I've done everything from computer science. I'm a computer scientist first. Energy is a pastime. I got into it because it brought all the areas of computer science together. For example, scheduling, you talk about what kind of programming language to use for interfacing with people. In this case, so a lot of various components of computers can come together, starting from algorithms, abstraction, decomposition patterns, logic, evaluation. I need to finish. So these are some of the techniques. The slides will have in the details. So here, for example, all of these are activities to do every day, right? Each of these has a trick in computer science. Scheduling, prioritization, deadline cognizance, checking feasibility, pipelining, caching, everything. So what we do normally can be done computationally in a better way if we applied our minds and did a disciplined approach to translating this into these problems. And this is an exercise I give my students when I teach a course like this. And they all come back thinking, knowing how to sell themselves as computer scientists. Why are computer science students better, more sought after? Because they do the mapping in their minds and make the world run faster. Basically, that's it. Thank you very much. Sorry, I have to run. No, no. Even not so smart questions, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.